Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
You're listening to Roundtable. I'm Niu Honglin, joined by Josh and Li Yi. Coming up on the second half of the show, in a significant step towards sustainability, China has enacted its first ever national-level water conservation regulations, providing legal guarantee for the country's water security, marking a pivotal moment in the nation's journey towards ecological responsibility and resource management. And a new term is gaining popularity among the Chinese youth, romance allergy. What does it mean? Do you have it? Let's find out on today's roundtable. But now, from March 22nd to 28th, we observe the 37th China Water Week with a theme, using water resources economically and carefully, strictly managing water resources. Prior to this, on March the 20th, a landmark legislation was passed in China, the Water Conservation Regulations, signifying a monumental stride in the country's commitment to building a water-saving society and ensuring national water security. Water conservation is not a new topic, so what new changes will this new regulation bring?
Yeah, actually, this regulation is the first national-level regulation about water conservation here in China, and this regulation will take effect on May the 1st, and it really provides comprehensive guidelines covering like water usage, water saving, and water management. And it also will provide like a legal framework for China's water conservation and water supply, which is also important for both high quality economic development and environmental protection. And specifically, the regulations determine rules on water use management, including setting water use quotas for key crops, industrial products and service sectors, controlling annual water use amounts within administrative regions, and restricting water-intensive projects in regions with severe water shortage. And also, the regulations specify water conservation measures in sectors like agricultural, industrial production, and improve the rules on supervision and safeguards for water conservation. And also, the regulation stipulates legal liabilities for unlawful acts such as using outdated and water-intensive technologies, equipment, and products that have been eliminated by government orders.
I was wondering, when it comes to having specific regulations, especially having a national-level regulations on water saving, what is the case in other countries outside of China?
Yeah, well, I will first talk about my own country in the UK, that there are various laws and regulations when it comes to water regulation, water management. There is one of the most important ones is called the Water Act, aptly named, the 2014 Water Act, and also the Flood and Water Management Act in 2010. And these laws focus on things like water quality, flood risk management and stuff like this. And there are also many national level water efficiency programs in the UK. These include things like incentives for consumers to reduce water usage, things like water saving devices. And there's also community engagement as well, which is kind of difficult to get a grasp of how effective they are actually, but there are efforts in the UK. Things like encouraging community-led river cleanups and stuff. The United Kingdom has a lot of rivers that are, you know, it's quite a skinny island, so the water is always quite close, and so there's a lot of rivers that are feeding into it. And so every town and village probably has some river somewhere that the town is based around, as most cities and villages and places are based around rivers, right? In the US as well, when it comes to state level, national level regulations, of course, in the US, there's like federal and state regulations, right? Because there's states within the US and then there's federal law, which encompasses the whole country. And it really varies depending on the state, because, of course, in a country as huge as the US, similar to China, the different regions have different relationships with water. Some regions have to be more careful when it comes to water conservation, right? And things like this. So they also have things like the Clean Water Act and the Safe Drinking Water Act, which have standards for water quality and safety. So Yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag, to be honest. And it was quite difficult for me to sort of get a grasp of what's going on, which I think is testament to how tricky this issue can be.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a tricky issue and it should be dealt with very carefully. In the meantime, like Josh has just said, different places, different provinces here in China have different relationships with water and they deal with water differently. So do you think making this national level regulation out there is a smart move or is just make a mountain out of a molehill?
I understand what you're saying, but I think sometimes we need a law only because we want to, or partly we want to show our assertion or our determination to solve this problem. Because although this new regulation is the first national level regulation on water conservation, yet it's not really the first one we have here in China, because previously we do have a lot of like provincial level laws already being implemented or being carried out across China. But this time we have this national level regulation. I think this really shows how China is determined to solve water supply and to protect water resources, because although we are a big country, we also have a big population. China is feeding around 20% of the world's population with only 6% of the world's fresh water. And considering the regional disparities in northwestern part of China and also many parts of the China, actually, water scarcity is even more serious and severe. So that's why I think this time we need an official regulation to really to tell people we are really trying to solve this problem. And also in many cases, we want to standardize the whole process. We want to offer some guidelines, some standards to make people understand, to make business understand how to really engage with this water conservation in the correct way.
Yeah, that is actually a really good point. And if you take a deeper look into the regulations, you get to see that not only does the regulation stipulates exactly the standardized usage of water for certain crops, for a certain industry, it has also stipulated that there should be a total amount of water usage for different regional administratives also have their own right as well as obligation to stipulate the usage of water in their areas. So I guess this is trying to strike a balance between providing a universal standards and taking into consideration of different places and their specific situations. So I was wondering, Josh, to you, when you first read the regulations, what are some management or what are some measures that you found interesting?
So one of the provisions is about ensuring the efficiency and enhancing measures in agriculture, right? And it's stipulated that to adjust the planting and breeding structure and the agricultural water use structure, there needs to be better drought resistance and things like this. So this is quite interesting to me because I've been quite interested in things like AI for some time and how that has helped with agriculture. And so of course, proper irrigation and water systems is vital to proper agriculture. Without it, there can be serious issues. So I think that this is one of the most important things in China when it comes to rural development and things like this. So developing these pipelines and facilities is paramount. And also, this is similar in the UK as well. There are a lot of water efficiency programs and agricultural organizations and research institutions as well that are trying to better develop water efficiency for agriculture. Things like crop selection and management, which is similar to China's approach. There's a focus on like adjusting crop selection and optimizing water use efficiency. And it really shows that when it comes to agriculture, there's pros and cons to this, but we're starting to really figure out as human societies how to standardize and make it work really effectively. Now, of course, the consequence of this is that it's becoming kind of mechanized and digitalized, and eventually probably all you're going to need is one big machine to do this. But it's really vital when it comes to things like feeding a whole nation, right? So I found that quite interesting.
Yeah, and also what really impresses me is how this new regulation is introducing a series of measures about water management in a quite scientific and comprehensive way, because we talk about like standardized the whole process, standardized water conservation, water management, water usages, but actually, in fact, I think what this regulation is trying to convey is that we are doing it in a quite scientific and reasonable way. Because when we look at the water quality management policy, I think this, according to this new regulation, the relevant industry departments of different regions here in China should really organize the formulation of industry water quotas, you know, for their respective regions, meaning that the water quotas should be revised in a timely manner in accordance with the region's economic and social development, water resources situation, and also how the industry is changing, how it's upgrading or transforming its local industries, and also how technology has been incorporated in its local water usages process. I think that is quite reasonable because China is really a country with like serious regional disparities. Not all cities where not all provinces are at the same level when it comes to the usage of water and when it comes to the need of water. So that's why I think we need like a more, you know, detailed system when it comes to water quota, and the same for the pricing systems actually, because pricing is so important when it comes to the supply and demand of water resources. And I think the same guideline is also implemented when it comes to the pricing and the metering systems of water resources here in China.
Besides that, the regulations also promote the use of unconventional water resources, being the types of water including rainwater, recycled water, mine water, slightly brackish water, etc., characterized by being able to be utilized or recycled after treatment. This is also interesting because I remember the first time that I learned that in my current residential community, the water we use to flush the toilet is not the same water that we would drink. Mm. And we pay for them separately. They are in different systems. And that only happened to me like in recent, I guess, 10 years.
Yeah.
Previously, we do not have that. And I think this is relatively more detailed regulation and management of water resources. And that would definitely help the overall water security of this country. And one other very interesting thing that I realized is that actually when we talk about water saving, we tend to focus on private use or civil use of water. We talk about how much water we can save if we recycle the water that we use to wash our hands and our face and use them to, for example, water the plant at home. Yes, those are all very important from an individual level. And yes, with the new regulations on how to price the water and how to give more incentives for people to have a water saving lifestyle, those are all very important. But actually, the country is focusing more on, like Josh has said, water in agriculture, water in different industries. And if you take a look at the amount of water that a factory, for example, require, it's stunning. Because for especially some industries that require the manufacturing of some high precision, high tech equipment, they would require the use of water. Yes. Constantly. They require the water to basically flush the entire industry chain and all that water. Many of the companies here in China started to recycle that water, and after certain process, the water can be reused and the saving rate can be up to 70%.
Yeah, and also besides like agriculture and the manufacturing industries, I think now we are seeing a rise of AI on a global basis. And according to some researchers, actually, AI can also be a water intensive industry.
Ooh.
Because you really need water to cool down the machines or like CPU you need to, you know, generate those like large language models or whatever new AI products. So that's why there are also arguments about or calling from those industry experts saying that those tech companies should also be more responsible when they're inventing new AI products, and also they need to make commitment. And I think some tech companies are also making their commitments to invest in water conservation or water saving projects when they are using actual water to invent their products.
I'm quite optimistic to see that with the new regulations in place, the call to action for all sectors is clear. Unite in the pursuit of a water efficient future. You're listening to Roundtable, coming up next. In a world where grand gestures often get more likes than genuine connections, we are diving deep into why some of us might just be allergic to what society calls romance. Stay tuned.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West, and understanding is the goal.
It's the hour of Roundtable with myself, Niu Honglin, Li Yi, and Josh Cotterell. I hate romance. Okay, hate is a strong word. I'm allergic to romance, and I am not alone. Many young people in China are with me on this. We all deem many romantic, air quotes, gestures quite cringeworthy, and I am curious about the two of you. So I planned a little game called Aw or Ill. Okay, so this is my game. Both of you are going to give me aw or ill reaction.
Thank you so much for preparing this.
And you should thank me for not telling you before the show. So this is going to be a fun game. Yeah. Okay, scenario number one to Li Yi. If your boyfriend take you out to a football game or a basketball game, and all of a sudden, he gets down on one knee on the big screen in front of thousands and thousands of spectators proposing to you.
Oh,
is it
an
all moment or ill moment?
Of course, ill. Please stop it. I would never marry you in that situation, okay?
Ah, one
point embarrassing. I think that's just too embarrassing for me.
Okay, so 1 point for Li Yi. Okay, the next question direct to Josh. Josh, you are walking on the street and all of a sudden you see these couple wearing identically matching clothes or accessories, one going out together. Is it an all moment or ill moment?
Honestly, I'm all for self-expression, so it's not something that I would do personally. I don't really care for it, but I don't mind. I think live and let live, to be honest. So I'm
so
kind of indifferent to it.
Moment,
it doesn't make me go awe. Yeah, I mean, maybe sometimes I'll find it entertaining. Maybe I'll laugh sometimes, but only in a positive way. I really can't hate on anything to do with this, but it doesn't warm the cockles of my heart.
Okay. Next question to Li Yi. Your partner invites you on a secret weekend trip, only revealing the destination after you arrive. Do you like that or not?
That's fine. I think that's just a secret weekend arrangement for me, in which I really appreciate, which saved my energy. So I think that's fine. Oh,
okay.
Wow, actually, wow.
Oh, you like that. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so Josh, when a couple use the toppings to spell out love message on a pizza and you're invited to see that scene, is it an all moment or ill moment?
It's probably more of an ew moment. Because, see, this is different. This is different to the first question you asked me, where I'm sort of passive in the situation. But the way you described it is that I've had to attend this.
Yes.
I've been made to come to this event. See, this is where this crossed the line for me. I should never have to see that.
Here's the follow-up question. What if one of your friends posted a detailed love letter or a long list of relationship milestones on their Facebook or Instagram page for everyone to see?
I think a bit of a red flag for me. I think that there's no need to post about it online. I mean, so I think there's no need to share those all of those details online with other people. It should be enough that they've happened to you. Unless it's for some sort of financial gain. I mean, if you're an influencer or something and it's going to make you and your partner a big chunk of cash, then I understand it. Go for it.
Oh, okay. Last question for Li Yi here. Calling each other by overly cutesy or private pet names in front of friends or public, or one partner feeding the other with their hands at a restaurant or public gathering.
To be honest, I think that's fine because I do that all the time.
But oh, really?
I'm just starting to have this self-reflection. Should I really stop doing this? Because Josh might be hating it.
Okay, this is just a fun little game that we do because sometimes definitely we would have different standards to ourselves and to the things that we observe. But I think the bottom line here is how do we see romance or what kind of gesture would we consider as so romantic and heartwarming? What are some other grand gestures that might gain a lot of likes on social media, yet we find it a bit too much, a bit too fake, or just putting on a performance for other people instead of the lovely couple? So I was wondering, do you guys think, because I didn't receive a lot of very positive reactions during the little game that I planned, which makes me very happy because I'm not the only one hating romance here or claiming to hate romance here. I was wondering, what's your standard? What do you deem as romantic and heartwarming, loving? And what do you consider as, they're just doing it just too much?
Well, I think the most romantic thing you can do, and I am not an expert on this at all, not to make it too personal, but I could probably do some lessons myself on this issue. But I think that the thing that I find to be most romantic when I see it happen with other couples or with myself is just when I see someone really putting their partner, you know, like really
on the
supporting
spot?
Them and not putting them on the spot, but sort of like helping them in some way to win, to have some sort of victory. So whether it's to do with their work or some sort of success that they've had, you know, and just to make it all about them, you know, and support them in some way or another. And I guess some social media posts that I've seen where, you know, maybe they've said how proud they are of their partner and what they've done and have just been quite selfless in that regard. I found that seems quite romantic to me without just sort of making it too Instagrammy and, you know, like just like everything's perfect and you know, we've never had a fight ever in our relationship, you know. Maybe I come from a too negative experience, I don't know.
No, actually I agree with Josh because personally I think romance is not really something you can convey by words or certain like either flowers or gifts you are sending to a partner, or a boyfriend or a girlfriend. I think action speaks louder than words. So sometimes for me, I think maybe a cup of hot water, and also maybe he can always order my favorite dishes without asking me when we dine out. I think these are very romantic behaviors, you know, for me, because he really understands me and he can really, you know, always remember what I want and, you know, try to satisfy my needs. I think that's the most important thing, and I consider that as romance. However, I do understand people have different needs. Maybe some people just like red roses, just like to display affection in a public and in a very open way to have all those audiences, you know, to cheer for you. Maybe that's some unique need from some people. Yet I think as long as his or her partner want to fulfill that, want to make that happen for that person, that's romantic enough.
The reason we're talking about this here today on Roundtable is because the term allergic to romance gets a lot of attention recently on the social media here in China, and a lot of people say they have that problem. They do not like these grand gestures. They are also more inclined to receiving genuine connections from their partner, and they do not care for public affection display from others as well. So do you think it's more of a choose of style, a different, let's say, basically different love language? Or is it a kind of a rebel to the commercialization of romantic impacted genuine expressions?
I think it really depends on how people are engaged with kind of romantic gestures. Think about it, because I would just propose a typical example, which might not be so proper, because I remember a few years ago, a marriage proposal ceremony of one star couple actually made a fuss on Chinese social media. And that guy actually is preparing a lot. He's like somehow renting a whole shopping mall and make some really pinky arrangement for the girl. And somehow he's also designing like a lot of games for that girl so that she can really experience a really surprising process. And I remember at that time, a lot of net users were saying that, oh, it's too much, isn't really romance. I think that guy is only trying to, you know, displaying his wealth, his power. Yet for me, I think as long as the couple is enjoying themselves, as long as that girl is enjoying the whole process, she can really feel the love the boy has for her. That's enough. However, due to the impact of maybe social media, you know, people do want to show off the gifts they receive, especially on certain special occasions, such as Valentine's Day or New Year holiday. Somehow it will lead to a peer pressure. And especially when you're seeing those photos published in your friend circle on WeChat, you are also wondering why I don't really get this gift. I also want to get this gift, although that might not be the thing you really want. Yet under that environment or under that kind of atmosphere, it's somehow becoming a game.
Yeah, it does sometimes seem as though it's becoming some sort of game. I guess when we're talking about relationships being integrated into social media and we start talking about likes and stuff like that, it does inevitably become a sort of competition, because that is the essence of social media. That's why I always see it as a little bit of a red flag whenever these two things are sort of integrated in any way, shape or form. But, you know, there are definitely some positives to it as well. Social media is this weird thing where it's like it's a communication-based app and it should be perfectly fine to show off your other half, you know, if you're happy, and why not share it, you know? But at the same time, when it comes to things like likes and popularity, it can easily get a little bit toxic, I think. And, you know, a lot of the happiest couples that I know in my life, I don't know if it's the same for you guys, if I think about my friends in really stable relationships, hardly any of them post pictures of one another online. In fact, they don't even post that much themselves, which is also quite telling to me. I imagine that there's probably some correlation there. I don't know, though.
Yeah, I guess calling ourselves being allergic to romance is just our very first step to say no to the so-called grand gestures, the showing off on social media, and making one step further to genuine connections with our significant other. And that brings us to the end of today's roundtable. Thanks to Li Yi and Josh, and of course, those of you who are still listening. Till next time, keep the conversations going and the ideas flowing. I'm Niu Honglin. Bye for now.